Welcome to All Things Marine, Hawaii's thought-provoking show dedicated to marine science and ocean conservation. All Things Marine, brought to you by Kosi Island Earth and the University of Hawaii, Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. And now, here's your host, the marine science gal, Carly Weiner.
Aloha, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, and today I'm excited to be talking with three exceptional voyagers who recently sailed on Hokulea during the Malama Honua Worldwide Voyage. With us today is Heidi Guth, Chief Operating Officer at the Polynesian Voyaging Society, Eric Koh from the Harold Cassald Foundation, and Dr. Sean Kani'apuni from Kamehameha Schools. We will dive into life at sea, traditional wayfinding, and the efforts that have been sparked by this initiative. Without further ado, let's dive right in. With us now, calling in, is Eric Koh. Eric, are you with us? Hi, Eric. Eric is the Senior Program Officer for the Marine Conservation Program at the Harold Cassald Foundation. Eric also sailed on Hokulea earlier this year and works on the Promise to Paina program. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Carly. How are you?
Good. I'm so glad to have you with us today. Thanks so much for making some time to call in.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
So we're starting off right now talking about the Polynesian Voyaging Society and the Hokulea and the entire initiative. So can you provide us with a little bit of an overview or introduction to the voyage?
Sure. The Worldwide Voyage was really launched with a mission to sail for a healthier, more sustainable future. And it's a three-year voyage around the world, 4 years if you count the preceding voyage around the state of Hawaii, where Hokulea is essentially stopping in dozens of countries as it circumnavigates the globe to share and learn about stories of sustainability, as well as help identify and really value and celebrate kind of the world's great quote-unquote navigators, or those who are kind of leading the efforts for a more sustainable world.
And now you've had an opportunity to sail on the canoe, is that correct?
I did. I've had the fortune of sailing the third leg, which was through Samoa, as well as most recently the 18th leg, which was through the Caribbean.
Excellent. And when was that leg exactly?
Let's see. Leg 18 started in March, early March. I believe our crew left Hawaii on March 1st, and we met up with Hoku and the crew that had brought her up from Brazil in St. John, U.S. Virgin Islands. And the leg ended in mid-April at Cape Kennedy, better known as Cape Canaveral in Florida.
Wow, so you just got back off the canoe not that long ago.
Yeah, it was pretty recent.
Wow. And so with it fresh in your mind, tell us a little bit about that experience. What was it like?
You know, Carly, it's really hard. I got to say that the experience far exceeds my ability to describe it. But and I think a lot of the crew will tell you that. I think sailing just tends to resonate with you at a frequency that's really never been hit before. Mm-hmm. But it's an incredible it's an incredible opportunity. Not only the magic of being on Hokulea, but really the people that she attracts, and not only on the crew, but at each port is just amazing.
I'm sure it's a once in a lifetime experience, and I'm sure there are so many stories and memories you have. Was there a particular port or portion of that leg that you were on that really stands out to you, and why does it stand out to you?
You know, there are a certain few memories that really kind of stick with me. I think St. John was pretty incredible because, you know, here we are halfway across the world and not really knowing what to expect. And, you know, lo and behold, there were just really, it seemed like anyway, hundreds people on this tiny little island in the Caribbean that followed Hokulea. They were following her online. They were following the Worldwide Voyage. And, you know, the incredible hospitality and generosity that people showed us while we were there. You know, we were staying at people's homes. There was this one gal that would bring fresh baked goods for breakfast to the canoe every morning. And, you know, that we, I think in Hawaii, tend to think that that's, you know, that's an aloha thing. That's a local thing, but really it's a human thing. And that was a wonderful experience and something to learn. And then of course, Cuba was historical. It was fantastic. It's an incredible place. And for me personally in the Marine, you know, resource management sector, I thought that it was really interesting to look at some of the parallels. You know, we in Hawaii are struggling with sustainability issues as being one of the most, you know, geographically isolated places in the world. And here Cuba is really struggling with those same issues of sustainability as being one of the most politically isolated places in the world. And so there was a lot to kind of learn from them.
And, you know, being so far away from Hawaii on this voyage, it sounds like there's still a lot of similarities, you know, going from island to island. Was there any unifying or bonding factor that you found while you were going through all these different ports?
Hard to say. You know, I think just as an island, as island peoples, you know, you kind of one common thread amidst all of the cultures that you run into from island to island is that people are very generous. They're very open. You know, I think folks learn how to live with a little and know what it means to kind of work together and share resources and understand, you know, the limiting resources that an island, you know, has to offer. And there's a mindset, I think, that comes with that. And I think that was definitely something that we share with islands across the world. And, you know, even Hokulea as an island, metaphorically, I think there's a lot of the PVS leadership and the Ohana Va'a leadership that have talked about this. You know, the island is a canoe and the canoe is an island. And, you know, for me, one thing that I always walk away whenever I have the opportunity to be on Hokulea or Hikianali or any other, you know, traditional sailing canoe is really, you know, it's such a small space. You know, maybe there's 600-700 square feet to share between a dozen people. And so really taking care of that place is going to be a direct reflection of our ability to take care of each other. And our respect for Hoku is embodied in our respect for each other. And what I shared with my crewmates is when I say I'm in the service of Hokulea, it really means I'm at the service of all of them. And if all of us in Hawaii had that kind of mindset, I don't think we'd be beset with half of the problems we're currently facing.
Yeah, seems like those principles are sort of life lessons that you can take with you anywhere, really.
Absolutely.
So in order to be able to sail for that long, I mean, there has to be some kind of training or practice. I imagine not everyone's just stepping on the canoe and going out for the first time. What kind of preparations did you have to undertake to be able to go on this voyage?
Well, you know, I'll defer to Heidi from the Polynesian Voyaging Society to have talked a little bit more about that. But frankly, all crew members are volunteers, and we all have to pass medical evaluations. We all have to meet physical requirements, you know, swim tests, run tests, you know, strength and agility training. And then it's really time on task to, you know, having experience on a canoe, understanding the rigging. I think someone told me at one point that if you took every piece of string and rope on a canoe and put them on the end, it would be eight miles or so worth of line. So, you know, there's a lot of rope, and you got to know which one to pull on and which one to loosen up on at the right moment. So, you know, just kind of time on task is I think, a contributing factor as well in terms of getting ready to sail.
Amazing. And I know I'm going off a little off the script here a little bit, but it's just so fascinating.
Can
you tell us a little bit about, you know, the life at sea? I mean, how did you handle sleeping and meals and that sort of thing?
You know, life on a canoe is wonderfully simple. You know, there are 10 bunks. And so if the crew exceeds that many people, which it often does, then some of you will trade off being able to sleep in the bunk. Watches normally range from 4 to 6 hours, which means, you know, you're on for 6 hours. That we were doing 6 hour watches and then you're off. So, for example, we were doing the midnight to 6 a.m. watch, and then we'd have 6 to noon to try and get some rest, and then we'd be on the noon to 6 p.m. watch. So you're not getting a ton of rest. You kind of just learn to deal with that. As far as food is concerned, I was the cook, which I, you know, I guess I'll probably apologize to my crewmates for the rest of my life for that. But
that's a high pressure job. That's high, the morale right there.
Yeah, you got it. You gotta, you know, you gotta try and keep everybody happy and certainly healthy. You know, there is a huge, super supportive, and really kind of on it team of volunteers for PBS that gets provisions ready for each leg. And so basically you have a few big bins worth of food per day and even recipes to go along with the provisions that are in those, you know, those containers. And then we'll supplement that with fresh fruits and vegetables at port, and then, you know, obviously fish when we catch it.
Amazing. Now, was there any really tense or scary moments when you were sailing for your voyage?
Thankfully, no.
Good.
I think this was a pretty safe leg as far as, you know, voyaging around the world has gone. Mm-hmm. But there's, you know, there's always risk when voyaging. And I'll tell you, Carly, things can go sideways really fast out there. You know, a little cut can become a festering sore real quick. Or if you, you know, one mental slip and you don't clip in the middle of the night, fall overboard, and, you know, things can get complicated real fast. And so, you know, luckily we had really competent leadership and, you know, an on-it crew that were aware of the potential dangers and really stayed on top of them. So luckily we all came back a sound body and mind.
That's excellent to hear. So you were the cook on the ship. What were some of the other roles and how many people were on board for each of the legs?
Good question. You know, an average crew normally ranges between 12 and 14. We actually had 11 on board for most of our leg, although that kind of went up and down depending on folks jumping on and off around the island. Usually, you know, the roles are really very widely. You know, obviously we have our navigator and we have our captain. Sometimes they're the same person, sometimes they're not. There are apprentice navigators on board. Our watch captains on board. So as I mentioned earlier, you know, we had two watches, 6 to 12 and 12 to 6. And each of those require a watch captain who really is standing leadership on deck during that watch. And then you also have, you know, in addition to the cook, you have the communications person. Maui Pauwataha of WVTV was our communications person. He's just incredible, works harder than pretty much anyone I think I've ever met. And the most wonderful guy. There's a medical officer on each leg, which is, as you can imagine, really critical. And we have we also have educators on board, so that, you know, when we're in port, you know, we can serve the mission appropriately. There's a carpenter on board. There, you know, we all assume roles, often multiple roles, to make sure that kind of no ball is dropped when we're sailing.
Well, it sounds like everybody was of the utmost quality and was really prepared. And so I'm glad to hear that everything went so smoothly for everyone. Do you plan to sail again on Hokulea?
One day. I've had the very, very humbling opportunity to sail two legs now. But ultimately, I have to stay employed and I have to stay married. So for me, I think that that means, you know, making sure that other people have the opportunity to sail on a worldwide voyage, which is just a once, as you said, a once in a lifetime thing. But I'm a lifelong PVS member, and I certainly hope to sail many more times.
Excellent. And now the voyage itself has spurred a lot of initiatives too. So it's not just, you know, the voyage. There's so many more collaborations and work being done around Hokulea. Can you share a little bit about some of the work that you're involved with?
Sure. As you mentioned, we've helped to convene and coordinate what's called the Promise to the Paiaina, which in Hawaiian is the Hawaiian archipelago. And really, it was born out of, you know, this understanding that, you know, as climate change, really both environmental and political, escalates in these really increasingly uncertain times all over the world, you know, there's really no better platform from which to highlight stories of collaboration and sustainability than Hokulea. And as one of Hawaii's cultural treasures and symbols of our Hawaiian Renaissance that embodies the sense of ocean dependence and stewardship, she offers a really unique viewpoint to share with the world. And so with this worldwide voyage with, you know, ideally anyway, worldwide implications, you know, what does it mean for Hawaii? And that's a question that we had to ask ourselves before she set sail in May of 14. And you know, if we're trying to essentially have this voyage catalyze a global dialogue for the sustainability, especially of our oceans, how can we possibly do that if we aren't committing or maybe recommitting to it here? And so, you know, I'm with the Harold Castle Foundation, and so with a unique perspective, I think, as a funder, where we see the landscape of organizations and programs in the marine resource management sector in Hawaii, you know, it leads me to wonder personally why we can't work more and better and focus our efforts on kind of shared priorities and goals. And so that was really where the promise to play, I know, was born from, was asking those really fundamental questions. You know, how can we in any small way show that the ocean in Hawaii that Hokulea comes home to is any better than the one she left behind? And really that what that really means is trying to get the sector of marine conservation and resource management organizations in Hawaii to sit down and really, you know, kind of take a look at what are our shared issues, you know, what are our shared resources, and where are those overlaps, and how can we really press on them and try and make a difference more so than we have in the past?
Well, it's a beautiful thing that you guys are doing. And have you started this initiative yet? I mean, have you been able to sit down and plan or, you know, map out what some of these things are that we can do here in Hawaii?
Yeah, actually, we have. Thanks. We actually, the promise to Pai Aina actually was catalyzed with a letter that we as 20 original organizations penned. Many organizations and individuals have joined on since, but it was really a letter to Hawaii that we wanted to be able to put on Hokulea back in April of 2014 before she left. And but really, beyond the letter kind of espousing the virtues of Hokulea and what she's going to voyage for and what our ocean means to us, we really had to sit down and start wrestling over a series of conversations about, okay, well, you know, what are we going to do? And so we originally had 20 commitments, which was very unwieldy, as you can imagine, especially when you're having kind of strategic conversations about these things. So over the past couple of years, we've been able to distill those down to five ocean commitments. And they're really expressions of what our oceans in Hawaii mean for us. The first commitment is our livelihood. And the commitment is that our ocean-based enterprises are sustainable, guided by cultural heritage, facilitated by relevant science, and authorized by sufficient management capacity. The second is our ocean is our island home. And the commitment is caring for our island communities, lands, and waters through partnerships and action. The third is our ocean is our future. And the commitment is that collective investment in our future leaders is priority, providing the proper tools, training, and experience to advance this work beyond our own lifetimes and abilities. The fourth is our responsibility. And our ocean is our responsibility, and that commitment is to build the state's capacity to sustainably manage Hawaii's ocean resources for generations to come. As the mandated authority, they are a critical partner to this work. And lastly, our ocean is our heritage. And the commitment is that our island way of life will thrive through community-based co-management of our marine resources. And each of those five commitments has targets associated with them.
That's amazing. Those five initiatives are so beautiful, and I really hope to see some actions taken under those initiatives. Eric, we're going to take a quick break. We have lots more to talk about. Thank you for making some time for us today to chat. about your experiences. We're going to take a break, and when we return, we'll learn more about Hokulea.
Quarterback looking, firing across the middle. Wow, what a grab in traffic. Larson really had defenders hanging all over, but somehow he comes up with the football.
On the football field, you've got to stay focused and not get distracted.
NFL Hall of Famer and President and CEO of CTIA, the Wireless Association, Steve Largent.
The same is true on the road. So before your wireless phone becomes a distraction, take a time out for safety. Place your phone in easy reach before you leave. Never take notes or look up a phone number while you're driving. In bad weather or traffic, call later. Dial sensibly and use a hands-free device. You know, your wireless phone can be your best safety tool to call for help, stop a crime, or help someone in need. However you use it, remember, with wireless, safety is your call.
The wireless industry reminds you to drive safely. For more information, visit www.wirelesssafety.org.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, and today we are talking about Hokulea and the Malama Honua worldwide voyage. We just spoke with Eric Koh from Harold Castle Foundation, and now I'm excited to have two amazing ladies in the studio with me, Sean and Heidi. Welcome to the show.
Aloha. Thanks for having us.
So now, as I understand, Sean, you were on the same leg as Eric, and Heidi, you were on a different leg, so I'm curious to get the female perspective of sailing on Hokulea and what different voyages where they went and how that all went down. So, Sean, let's start with you first. From your perspective, I mean, you sailed with Eric, so we know the voyage direction. But what was your experience like as a female navigator and sailor, and your perspective on the trip?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking that question. It was great to hear Eric's stories and remember, you know, kind of walk down memory lane. And definitely, I agree with him that it's hard to put into words the kind of impact that being part of the worldwide voyage has, and just being on Hokulea, knowing the tremendous legacy that and beacon of hope that she provides for our native Hawaiian Lahui. So for me, it was very culturally meaningful and deep at kind of a Na'au DNA level. And just a beautiful experience. And so, yeah, as Eric mentioned, we were in the BVI. We were in St. John, which is Heidi's homeland. We were in the British Virgin Islands and Cuba and Florida. And each one of those locations had such a different, was such an entirely different experience, one from another. So in the British Virgin Islands, you know, being around people who are philanthropists and thinking about how they can create social impact with the wealth that they've accumulated and being really serious about that, people like Sir Richard Branson and John McManus and others, they were heartfelt and genuine in that intent. And so wanting to, having their support for Malama Honua and the impact of the voyage and the message that it carries around the world was really meaningful. And then going to Cuba and seeing the way that Cuba has lived into a reality of collectivist ideals where well-being for all people is something that they all believe in and have actually created. It's not perfect, but it's an incredible lesson to learn from. And then going to Florida and just seeing the tremendous aloha and hospitality that community greeted us with. It was like, are we still in Hawaii? Where are we? Because these are all our people. They're all here. And the meaning that Hokulea carried in those waters in Florida was exceptional, I think, because they all knew that we were coming. They would track us down and very closely, you know, they would come from port to port. The same families would follow because having a piece of Hawaii there in Florida right in their backyards, it just made people cry. They just wanted to be a part of it, and it made us feel so much aloha for those people. I have really good friends now, you know. Shout out to Dee Dee McFadden if she gets to hear this show, and her children, her husband, who are from here but living in Florida. And then being a female, I mean, Heidi can talk about that a lot more than me. This was my very first voyage, so I like to say that I was the rookiest of the rookies. But it was great. There were 10 guys and 2 women. Me and Noi Kamalu were the only women on board for the 5 weeks, 24/7, on 62 feet of space. And it was really beautiful, actually.
That's amazing. So, Heidi, you know, I've heard Eric and I've heard Sean. Do you have similar experiences? What's your take on the voyages and being a female navigator?
Well, Carly, I am in no way a navigator. I'm just a lowly crew member, and I'm very grateful for that opportunity every chance that I get it. And I think that that parallels what both Sean and Eric have said. We're always very humbled to be asked on board, and whenever you are, you not only get this amazing opportunity to experience a way of life that's ancestral and basic and simple and precious, but you also get this amazing gift of crewmates for life. And I've been able to voyage on Hokulea since 2004, and I have quite a variety of crewmates for life who really are ohana, and we carry each other as we do on the va'a, we do on land. And that's part of what Hokulea helps to exemplify, really. It's not just island living, because you only have what you can carry with you on board, and you each have to be respectful of what qualities and skills each of you brings to the table to carry you safely to the next shore. But you also are constantly aware and observant of everyone's needs and what nature is providing you on a daily basis. So Hokulea is an exemplification of life on an island and sustainability and the interconnectedness that we all have with nature and culture and our ancestors, and how we can perhaps therefore show that continents are islands, and there's island Earth as well, and we're all interconnected. We all have special roles to play and skills to bear. So yes, in summary, very grateful. I do not think there's any difference in being a female or a male. About 1/3 of our crew members are female, and I was the only one who happened to be a female on my leg this last time, and no one treated me any different, and that was another incredible gift.
Wow. Left me a little bit speechless there. That's a very amazing, just beautiful description of the of your experiences. So how many times have you sailed on Hokulea in the past?
I have, again, been very fortunate. One of the questions that you asked Eric a little earlier is the training that's required to become a crew member. And generally speaking, you have to put in a lot of volunteer time. And the purpose for that is not only because we need thousands of volunteers to take care of Hokulea when she's here in port. So please keep that in mind, all of our listeners, that we're always looking for volunteers and help who like to sand and varnish and lash. And Hikianalia is being taken out of the water very soon, actually. But that also provides an opportunity to our captains to see how people work together. And that's how our crews are selected. So yes, you do have to pass all of these very strict regimens of health, fitness, and knowledge of how to sail. There's a lot of crew training involved. But you also all have to be able to work well together, and your personalities need to jibe just right. So I think that's why each of us have a different experience, but a similar one in becoming ohana.
That would be important to get along with everybody on such a small vessel. Yeah,
it is. It's amazing.
And so why a worldwide voyage now? What was the impetus behind doing this large-scale, multi-month trip?
This voyage was actually envisioned back in 1992 by Lacey Veach, astronaut, and Nainoa Thompson and his father, Pinky Thompson, as a way of trying to teach the world all of Native Hawaiians' amazing values and how they've cared for this place for couple thousand years successfully. But why now? We had, by 2008, which is when we decided that we were going to move forward with this worldwide voyage, already sailed 130,000 nautical miles, which is about the equivalent of 5 times around the Earth, but all in the Pacific. And when we went in 2007 to Japan, that was just an amazing experience for all of us who were able to be there for that, and that we realized that this culture far, far away on the other side of the Pacific, not Polynesian at all, but so much aloha, just like Eric and Sean were describing they experienced in non-Polynesian ports that they visited. And just how much they respected and honored how we respect and honor our ancestors. And that Hawaii, as a representation of aloha, and Hokulea as Hawaii's canoe, really helped to bring, inspire, become a catalyst for all these people to look to their own pasts and that own indigenous knowledge and move it forward to successfully care for their homelands, their cultural and natural environments. And so we thought we should continue on.
It's amazing. And did you find, I know we've had already some mention examples of that, did you find people, when you went into different ports, embracing that philosophy and you know, interacting with the crew to learn more?
Absolutely. I was lucky, like Eric, to be on two legs of this particular worldwide voyage, one in the Pacific from French Polynesia through the Cook Islands into American Samoa, and then the other from Brazil into the Caribbean to the U.S. Virgin Islands. And in both cases, the Pacific and the Caribbean, it's island communities who already understand that interconnectedness and that closeness to nature and culture. But also they're collectively, it's almost as though there's an oceanic continent that's been created in the Caribbean as well as in the Pacific. And so they know that everyone has to work together and respect the differences, but also the similarities amongst our places. And I think island people in general, coastal people as well, generally are very respectful of the ocean and its connectedness, and also of nature and its impacts and human impacts thereupon. So we know when we have to look out for each other and when to notice when something's wrong and to try to fix it collectively. But I think Sean probably had her own special experiences as well.
Mm-hmm. So you say to notice the environment. When you both were sailing, did you find any examples of marine debris or really obvious, I guess, examples of human impact on the ocean?
Yes. Just kind of processing that question and seeing a whole bunch of images go through my mind. I think one of the ahas for me that I bring back here and that I talk to my children about was seeing the condition of the Everglades and the inland waterways in Florida, actually, and hearing from the community about the way that they've, or the what they've observed over the passage of time through, you know, in a generation's time, as the waterways were diverted to make room for more sugar production, there was some damage done, and the salt and freshwater systems came together in a way that didn't allow the water to be cleaned. And so the water is black, and there's dolphins and manatee and all kinds of animals that rely on that water system. And so, and even going through Lake Okeechobee, people would come up and talk to us about it and how vital it made us feel that the messages that we are carrying around the world, and especially as we come back into our own country and sail up the Eastern Corridor, that it's really important. This work is so critical because you can see in one state the kind of damage that can be done over a relatively short amount of time of human endeavor. Yeah. And knowing that there are many, many people who care so much about it, they're not giving up, but at the same time, sometimes it feels like, you know, what can you do? How can you correct something that massive? And so for me, that was a big awakening. And I'm not saying people had malicious intent or anything like that, but sometimes we don't notice the damage that's happening right around our very own land. And so here in Hawaii, it made me come home and say, wow, we got to take care of our ocean. And even more importantly, even if we're the best ocean caretakers in the world, if the rest of the world isn't caring for the ocean, it's all going to come back to us anyway. I mean, look at what's happening in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands with the amount of plastic that they're picking up. Nobody lives there, but it's all coming here. So those kinds of, I think those kinds of awakenings and highlights were really important and will be part of our storytelling as we go forward.
That's nice to hear. And I think the education piece of this is so important. It's so nice to hear that, you know, I mean, the voyage itself is very important, but that the message expands beyond that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important. Sean, I know you're involved in a little initiative through this voyage as well here in Hawaii. Can you talk about some of the education work you're doing?
Yeah, it's a little initiative that we hope becomes a big one. So it's called The Promise to Children, and it's a corollary to The Promise to Paiaina that Eric discussed. So he's kind of facilitating that collective, a first time ever collective of people coming together around environmental care and management. And so similarly, The Promise to Children was a hugely momentous opportunity catalyzed by the Worldwide Voyage for education leaders around the state to actually sign a promise to create a future worth leaving our children. And the language of it is very beautiful, but it's about really, at its core, educational transformation that instills in children and inspires in them the desire and the know-how to live the values and action that are called for in Malama Honua. And so the Promise to Children leaders includes, like, you know, the president of the University of Hawaii. So David Lasner is a huge partner. Kathy Matayoshi, the superintendent, has been a really amazing partner. At Kamehameha, our CEO, Jack Wong, and many of our leaders, Randy Fong, Holua Stender, a number of people are actively involved. Our community education group is actively involved. And, you know, there are others like Chaminade, Punahou School, Jim Scott, Tim Cottrell, Iolani. So all of the, and many, many others that I'm not even mentioning that are part of the, an important part of the work that are working to answer the question of what happens after the voyage is accomplished. So the canoe comes home in 2017. It's going to be amazing. Kualoa. And what is the legacy that we are leaving, and what is that commitment to a future worthy of our children? And so we have created a mission statement around seeking to inspire children to explore, discover, and learn about and protect Island Earth so that they're prepared and empowered to navigate toward a better future. And it's that, how do we empower children to be able to navigate toward a better future that really is the core of it?
So how do you link or relate the Hokulea and its voyage to empowering children to, or the youth of Hawaii to follow some of these principles?
Yeah, that's a good question. So as I got to see firsthand what that's like as education specialist on the canoe, there's like 35 or something different roles, and everyone's assigned a role. And you just carry it out, whether you know how or not. You figure it out. It's makahana ka ike, working, you know, working, learning on as you work. And a big part of it is reaching out to the community, often finding schools that, you know, on the spur of a moment might be able to take advantage of having this amazing opportunity to learn from traditional Pacific navigation, its history, and then the message, and in ways that tie into what they're doing in their community to Malama Honua. And seeing the faces of kids just light up as we carried a message about aloha and about the importance of not just caring for our planet and the environment and natural resources, which they learn about all the time in science and stuff, but caring for each other. And how do you do that better? Because that's where it starts. So building that pilina, those relationships. I think the canoe has tremendous lessons around how to coexist in harmony and using each other's talents in ways that strengthen the whole, that are kind of unsurpassed.
That's amazing. I'm just inspired sitting here and listening to
all of you
today.
Come on board. Let's go, Carly.
It's fantastic. And Heidi, how about you? Have you had any interactions with youth groups or with any children in the ports that you've gone on, into with Hokulea? Do you see interest from the next generation?
Absolutely, Carly. I mean, that's one of the most inspiring aspects for crew members, I think, is watching children around the world, their faces light up, and how they all ask the same question about how we go to the bathroom because there is no toilet on board.
And the answer to that is carefully.
Yes, you make sure you tie yourself on and you go overboard. The stuff, not you.
Yeah.
But yes, kids are just genuinely curious. They're naturally curious. And when they see something which looks a little different, like our traditional Polynesian double-hulled voyaging canoe, come into their port, they instantly want to get on board and touch and and ask questions. And that's part of what Hokule is all about, is experiential learning. It brings out natural inquisitiveness about subjects like science and math and geography now, all these places yeah. we've gone. And so that's great to have kids who maybe wouldn't be so engaged in a classroom, just and completely entranced and engaged on board the canoe. And that's our goal, is it's an instant outreach opportunity, and it keeps us inspired and moving forward as well.
Well, I'm entranced and engaged. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we are going to talk more.
You mean I could have diabetes and not even know it?
Then why would I want to know?
Heart disease, amputations, stroke, blindness can all be caused by diabetes. So it's critical that you know. If you're over 45, you don't exercise, and you're overweight, you're at risk. But a simple blood test can detect the problem, and with early treatment, you can prevent the devastating effects of diabetes. Call the American Diabetes Association at 1-800-DIABETES. Don't be blind to diabetes.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice,
what if something happens? Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of a terrorist attack.
Mom, if you're not home,
should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, and today we are talking with some very special people about their time aboard Hokulea and the worldwide expedition. So Heidi and Sean, we are back, and I'm just, my jaws dropped chatting with you and just hearing about your experiences. It makes me want to just jump out right now and go to the ocean. So we've been talking a lot about youth empowerment and education capacity, and Sean, with Hokulea, what other educational capacities have you found or benefits that you've been able to share with the community?
Yeah, so just to, and it's not just me, but there are many others that have been way, you know, who are very well versed in how to bring the navigation mindset to children through Hokulea. And so we like to think of it as a floating classroom, as an intergenerational classroom that serves both families and communities. And just as a little example, when we were in Florida, we would meet people, and then they would bring their entire family down, and the kids would go down into the bunks, and they would pretend to, you know, try to learn how to steer. And so just while their parents were learning about, you know, how the canoe was designed and made. And so it's definitely an exploratory environment for everyone. It's a science laboratory for creating new knowledge, and especially as the canoe has made its way around the world, I think it has prepared an unmatched kind of expertise with people who've actually physically experienced all these pieces. So, you know, especially the navigators, so the captains, Kalepa and Nainoa and Bruce, who have together experienced, you know, very different geographic areas and climates and ways of caring for the planet. And I think they're kind of unique in that knowledge base. So how do we maximize it? It's also a venue for leadership development, especially youth leadership, and a living library, the 10,000 stories of hope, of an amazing collection of stories connecting very ancient to very contemporary knowledge and technology that can be applied as we move into the future. So there's so many uses, and ultimately I think Hokulea is about education. When you hear Nainoa Thompson, president of PVS, Polynesian Voyaging Society, talk about it, it's always about education. And so thinking about that is really what kind of gives life to the promise, and the promise to children especially. And one more thing, if I could just add, and then I'll shut up for a while, but I think here at home, the special meaning that the voyaging and the canoe has had for our youth who are especially marginalized, and our people who might not have felt fully confident or fully embraced in their learning environments, this provides them the kind of ability to have confidence and pride in the ingenuity of their ancestors, of our ancestors, and then that gives them new hope about the kind of value and impact that they can have in the world. And if you talk to the crew members, so many of them have been re-inspired, re-engaged as lifelong learners because of engaging on the canoe. And so it's just an incredibly powerful vehicle for education.
Well, it always blows me away, you know, when you think about the ingenuity and ability to navigate the oceans. You know, nowadays we need so much technology and so many things to be able to go out and do that. And to look at a more, you know, a different alternative approach to that and being able to accomplish the same thing is really powerful. It's incredible.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Heidi, we've talked a lot about the voyage itself, but we haven't talked that much about the canoe and about Polynesian Voyaging Society as a whole. Can you tell me a little bit about the canoe's build or when it was built, and is it for Polynesian Voyaging Society only? Share a little bit more about the canoe with me.
Well, Hokulea, Bruce, one of Hawaii's five po navigators, Bruce Blankenfeld, always says Hokulea is Hawaii's canoe. And we all believe that very deeply. And that's part of why we started out this worldwide voyage by sailing around Hawaii first. We wanted to make sure we had all of Hawaii on board when we left Hawaii's shores. And that's also part of why we now have three canoes. We have Hokulea, which was built in 1975 as a way to prove that Polynesians intentionally crossed the world's largest ocean and populated it well before Columbus with his compass and sextant. But Hokulea, we have Hokulea. We also have Hikianalia, which is her sister Va'a, which sailed with Hokulea throughout the Pacific portion of the worldwide voyage. And we have our website, which is our third canoe. Mm-hmm. And that's www.hokulea.com. And that's where you can live track Hokulea as she is sailing, and Hikianalia as well. Hokulea, as I said, she was built really just for one voyage to prove that we could intentionally sail using traditional navigation from Hawaii to Tahiti, the first trans-archipelagic voyage in 600 years. And then she was going to go into a museum, and that was going to be it. But instead, she's now sailed 150,000 nautical miles and
wow.
is in Chesapeake Bay, Virginia, of all places. So Hokulea is made of fiberglass and composite. She was rebuilt back in from 2010 to 2012. She was taken completely apart. And like Eric said, she has 9 miles of line, most of which lashes her together. There's no nails. There's no screws. She's tied together beautifully, an amazing, another innovative step for Polynesians because that adds strength and flexibility to our canoe. Hikianalia was built using more modern methods with bolts and screws, and we've taken to taking those out and lashing her instead so that is more flexible. Yeah, so Hokulea, she's seen a lot of time and space, and she's actually, just like I think Sean was alluding to, we're also using her now as a platform for teaching succession and leadership of the Polynesian Voyaging Society and our Ohana Va'a. So Hokulea not only belongs to all of Hawaii and really to Polynesia, she's inspired 21 other voyaging canoes to be built throughout the Pacific since 1975, so when she was launched. She's inspired other cultures across the Pacific to redefine their own pride and sense of place and interconnectedness, and we hope that she continues to do all of those things.
Wow. And is it hard to find the knowledge or skill to be able to tie the canoe together? I imagine there's not that many people out there that know how to do this or have this special talent.
There's a lot more now. Ever since we took Hokulea apart and put her back together again, and we do that pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm.
We will do that again when she comes back after this voyage. Bruce Blankenfeld he's our lead teacher. Mm-hmm. For that skill set. And we had almost 1,000 people touching Hokulea when we took her apart and put her back together again. And that very kind man has taught many people the right knots and methods of pulling together. Usually you need 4 people to pull down at one time in order to tie the right knots underneath the va'a. It's a huge collaborative effort. And part of the goal is to make sure that that knowledge continues on as well as the navigation knowledge.
It expands, too.
Exactly.
Yeah. Amazing. So when you're out there sailing on Hokulea and you know all this planning and building and community and connection has gone into the canoe, do you feel, is there a certain feeling that goes with being on Hokulea versus just stepping onto any other canoe?
Definitely. Can I start? And then for me, I think just knowing that you become immediately part of that mo'oku'auhau, that genealogy and that legacy, and it's building on the backs of so many that have come before, you know, people, icons like Mau, like Papa Mau, definitely Nainoa, who doesn't like to admit it, but he is an icon, and Bruce and so many others who've given their lives to make this a reality, Uncle Pinky, Thompson, and Eddie, who are all people that were, you know, friends and colleagues of my father and that generation, and now passing the ropes on to younger and younger generations as we move forward. So being a part of that and recognizing that kuleana, that responsibility to carry it forward, I think is tremendous for me. And like, I always felt like I belonged on the canoe. As soon as I got on there, I was like, oh my goodness, I got to stay. I told Nainoa, I don't think I want to get off.
I'd like to say that I think everything that Sean said is absolutely correct. There are other va'a, though, across Hawaii, and I think everyone feels exactly the same way about their va'a. I mean, Hokulea is the mama, that's what we call her, but Makali'i on the Big Island with Captain Onohi Paishan, and we have Namahoe that's being built and about to be launched on Kauai. We're all very excited to see her. So every va'a, Kalua, double hull voyaging canoe, that has a community behind it, is going to feel that way. You're going to feel that special connection. And when we do sail, we often, when we give our pule every evening, we make sure to mention that there's a couple thousand or more people sailing with us. The people who have touched, whose hands have touched us and the canoe, our ancestors, and there's literally 2,000 volunteers that are helping to make this voyage happen.
Many hands make light work.
And happy work.
Yes. So now, you said that Hokulea is now on the East Coast in Chesapeake Bay. Is that correct?
That's right. She's at Hull Springs right now. She just landed there today, which is a teacher's college for environmental learning. And she'll be heading up to Washington, D.C. area this weekend. She'll be there this Sunday.
Wow.
And then she's heading up to New York for June 8th, World Oceans Day.
Excellent. Is anything planned for World Ocean Day?
Oh my goodness, you should see our office. Yes, there's a lot going on for World Oceans Day. We have the UN Secretary General who will be seeing the message in a bottle that he put on board in Samoa with us, a promise that he made back in 2014 that there would be a difference by the time we got to the UN on World Oceans Day in 2016 in how the whole world is caring for the oceans.
And just to add to that, there will be a Hawaii delegation from both promises, both collective promise to Paiaina and children, who are going up to that event and presenting a declaration from the state of Hawaii about how we intend to lead in this commitment for greater ocean health.
Wow, it's incredible. I look forward to hearing all the amazing things that Hokulea is doing and all the work that all of you are doing through these initiatives and through everyone else. And what's that website again where we can follow Hokulea if we're interested?
www.hokulea.com.
Excellent. Well, I want to give a very warm mahalo to all of my guests, Heidi and Sean and Eric, for spending some time with us today and sharing their experience and knowledge. It's been truly an amazing hour, very inspirational, and I look forward to hearing more. I want to thank our sponsors, the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. Now, I'm Carly Weiner. Get out there and enjoy our ocean planet.
Mahalo nui.
Aloha.
Thank you.